days.
Thank you. Utah Clean Energy would like to call Ms. Sarah Wright as our witness.
Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give should be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
Good morning, Ms. Wright. Will you please state your name, position, and business address for the record?
Yes, my name is Sarah Wright, S-A-R-A-H-W-R-I-G-H-T. I'm the Executive Director of Utah Clean Energy, and my business address is 1014 2nd Avenue, Salt Lake City, Utah, 84103.
Thank you. In this docket, did you file direct testimony on August 12th and rebuttal testimony on August 29th?
I did.
If I asked you the same questions today as set forth in your direct and rebuttal testimony, would your answers be the same?
They would.
I'd like to move the admission of Ms. Wright's direct and rebuttal testimony in this docket.
Any objections? They're received.
Thank you. Ms. Wright, do you have a summary of your testimony you've prepared?
I do.
Go ahead and present that. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. Good morning, everyone. Utah Clean Energy, is that a good loudness? Sorry, you never know what it is. Excuse me. Utah Clean Energy strives to create a safer, more efficient, cleaner, and smarter energy future. We strive for a smooth and cost-efficient transition to an energy portfolio that imposes fewer risks to Utah families and businesses. The Public Utilities Regulatory Act, PURPA, is an important mechanism for facilitating renewable energy development and creating growth in a monopoly-controlled market, while reducing risk associated with our heavy reliance on finite and polluting fossil fuels. Fair pricing for QFs, both small and large, is critical to protecting the long-term interests of Utah and Utah ratepayers. Utah Clean Energy's interest in this docket is safeguarding Utah's proper implementation of PURPA laws and regulations. Mr. Duvall claims that Utah Clean Energy's opposition to the company's proposed modifications to the avoided cost method is intended solely to maintain artificially high rates for small QF customers at the expense of the company's customers. Contrary to Mr. Duvall's claims, it is Utah Clean Energy's goal to ensure that avoided cost pricing fairly values renewable energy electricity generation, at least in principle. It is the position of Utah Clean Energy that avoided costs should be a reflection of the actual avoidable costs, including costs the company would otherwise incur in the absence of QF generation based on its resource procurement decisions. As discussed in my testimony in multiple dockets, ratepayers will be on the hook for costs associated with carbon regulation and stranded assets. The company does include carbon costs in its IRP analysis and in its fuel and energy cost projections. Future carbon regulation is even more certain now that the proposed EPA rules for new and existing power plants, or with the proposed EPA rules. Any adjustments removing the value of estimated carbon regulatory costs from Schedule 37 pricing will discount this important and growing benefits that renewable energy resources bring to the system and reduce the probability of these risk mitigating resources being built. It is my opinion that this is not in the public and ratepayers' interest. Currently, the IRP presents the company's best public analysis of the cost and risks associated with the environmental implications of its resource decisions, including the costs and risks associated with carbon regulation. However, the company has made specific adjustments to extract carbon costs from its official forward price curve and other grid files to remove this value from the avoided cost pricing. It is important to remember that ratepayers, not the company, will pay for the costs that the company specifically extracted from avoided cost pricing. To use one set of assumptions to determine the company's resource investment strategies and a stripped down set of assumptions to calculate avoided cost pricing for PURPA does not result in costs that are fair to ratepayers. If the company will agree to cover all the costs associated with future carbon rules and hold ratepayers harmless, then it might be appropriate to remove such costs from QF pricing. But as it stands now, ratepayers will be on the hook for these costs, and it is important to value the risk mitigation that QF renewables bring to the system, at least to the same extent that it is valued in the company's IRP. The IRP standards and guidelines call for avoided cost pricing to be consistent with the IRP. Therefore, to the extent that costs associated with environmental regulation are considered in the IRP, these costs should be carried through to avoided cost pricing. Schedule 37 and Schedule 38 are different. And while the company's proposed changes do not make them consistent. Schedule 37 was designed to be a simpler method for small QFs that do not have the negotiating power and resources of large QFs. A good example of the difference is in the calculation of the energy payment. The value of solar energy is undervalued in Schedule 37 compared to Schedule 38. In Schedule 37 method, the energy value is calculated using a 10 megawatt flat load decrement, missing the value a solar QF brings during summertime heavy load hours. In contrast, the Schedule 38 method uses actual supply curves for the specific QF resource in the grid modeling in order to calculate a more accurate energy value that better reflects the value that solar generation brings in heavy load hours. This difference alone, for example, results in a lower, less accurate energy value for solar resources under Schedule 37 relative to the more resource-specific Schedule 38 method. The company proposes changes in interest of so-called consistency have reduced avoided cost prices without consideration of the overall method, without consideration for the overall method considerations such as accuracy and fairness. So, and also regarding the company's proposal to begin charging integration charges for small QFs, there's not enough evidence on the record to support charging small QF integration charges at this time. For example, there is no evidence on the record that small QFs, which interconnect to the distribution system level, impose any integration cost. Further, virtually all small QFs currently contracted for are solar QFs. An RMP has not conducted an integration study for solar. Large QFs have the opportunity to negotiate a credit for their benefits that they bring to the transmission and distribution system, an opportunity to offset some of the integration costs with additional system benefits. Whereas small QFs have no such option. Until there is more evidence and parties have the opportunity to examine the trade-off in costs and benefits of small QFs, it is premature to charge small QFs with an integration charge. Regarding the capacity payment and capacity value, there continues to be confusion around renewable energy resources capacity factor and their capacity value. The capacity factor is used to estimate the amount of energy produced by a resource, while the capacity value or credit is a reliability-based calculation that assigns a value to a resource based on its ability to reduce the probability of a loss of load event and to maintain system reliability. For example, a solar resource's effective capacity value is significant because it provides most of its generation during heavy load hours. Solar capacity value is higher than its capacity factor. In contrast, wind generally has a higher capacity factor than solar, yet a lower capacity value. Utah Clean Energy recognizes that there may need to be an adjustment to the capacity payment calculation, but rather than eliminate the capacity and energy payment, as the company proposes, and rather than calculating the payment based on the QF's maximum output during the peak period, as is the current method, which may overestimate a QF's capacity value, the commission should continue to authorize the capacity payment option, but modify the capacity payment to reflect the QF's value in reliably meeting load. In other words, the capacity payment offered to renewable QF should be adjusted consistent with the capacity value of a renewable resource, but should not be eliminated as a payment option. It is especially important not to eliminate the capacity payment when solar projects are being undercompensated for their energy value. Regarding consistency, if consistency between Schedule 37 and Schedule 38 is the primary objective in setting Schedule 37 avoided cost rates, then we must do a much more thorough review and comparison of Schedule 37 and 38 methods than has been presented in this docket to ensure that we are not further sacrificing accuracy in Schedule 37 prices. Being selectively consistent defeats the objective of consistency. Moreover, consistency between the methods has never been the priority in setting Schedule 37 avoided cost rates. Schedule 37 and 38 has never been set in the same manner. In fact, Schedule 37 and 38 were always intended to recognize that there are differences between small and large QFs and small and large QF developers. In this docket, parties have supported changes that lower the price to the point that Schedule 37 prices appear to be lower than Schedule 38 prices. This is not fair, and this does not meet the intent of PURPA. And that concludes my summary. Thank you.
Ms. Hayes?
Thank you. Ms. Wright is available for cross-examination.
Thank you. No questions. Thank you.
Good morning, Ms. Wright.
Good morning.
I just have a few questions. I'd like to start with a few questions about the integration cost of Schedule 37 customers. Is it a fair statement that the integration costs are intended as a measure of the cost of power system that it incurs as it responds to the variability and the uncertainty of intermittent generation resources like solar and the types of resources we generally see in Schedule 37 customers?
I'm not an expert on how these studies are completed and everything that goes into them. I'm sure that is part of it. Probably has to do with where it is on the transmission system. We have to reliably meet load at all times, and load is variable as well.
Okay. But is there a difference between a 2.9 megawatt windmill and a 3.1 megawatt windmill in the variability if the two are at the same site?
Well, I would say if they're at the same site?
Yep.
No.
And so would a customer be indifferent if there are two different pricing calculations for one being at 2.9 and one being at 3.1?
Well, I guess I should revise the last question. There may be a difference based on where it is on the distribution system, and most of the small QFs are solar on the connecting to the distribution system.
Okay, let's use that example. Let's say in my hypothetical, we have an industrial park that has, let's say we have 80 owners in this industrial park, and each owner has its individual 1 megawatt solar project on the roof. Is the collective 80 megawatts of solar there going to be different in its variability or its costs to the power system as opposed to a neighbor that's across the street, let's say an 80 megawatt Schedule 38 solar array?
Well, it probably wouldn't be across the street, but yes, the company has done studies on adding megawatts of solar in the distribution system in Tokerville and Delta area, and they found out that by adding it to the distribution system, it actually reduced the peak demand on that distribution system. So it did bring benefits to that system. So yes, there are when it goes on to the distribution system, there may be benefits that are not being calculated and added into the or considered when adjusting the when looking at the integration costs.
Okay, and with respect to the other integration costs, like responding to the variability in the output, would those be the same for both?
You know, unfortunately, I'm not an expert on integration studies, and my point in this case is that there hasn't been a study that looked at that. The impacts of integrating on the distribution system. I'm not an expert, so I can't answer those questions.
Okay. Let me move on just to a couple brief questions. You testified both in your pre-file testimony and your comment that you believe that the commission should retain both the energy only and the capacity and energy separate options for the QFs under Schedule 37, is that correct?
Yes.
And those would result in different prices to the QF, is that correct?
Unless they're changed to make them more consistent, yes.
Okay. And Is it accurate that a customer is only indifferent to one price?
I'm sure there's a range of variability on that, but if you want just one exact price, then I don't know. It's really, it depends on if the price is accurate.
Okay, but there would only be one actual price, whether we hit it precisely with the Schedule 37 method. There would in reality only be one actual perfect avoided cost price.
I've never seen a perfect avoided cost price, but in theory that's correct.
And so if there's two different methods that result in different pricing, one of those would not be an accurate reflection of the avoided cost.
I'll accept that.
And just finally, with respect to the capacity payments during this sufficiency period, are you aware of any simple cycle combined, or excuse me, simple cycle combustion turbine that will in fact be avoided? Is there anything in the IRP, a plan to build a facility that would be avoided?
My point around the having a capacity payment is that the capacity payment is that the way that the solar is modeled, it is not receiving fair value for the energy that provides during those peak market purchases. So I don't know of a simple cycle, but until we look at the whole model collectively, the whole looking at how we calculate 37, to take away the capacity payment without looking at how the energy is calculated, will be undercompensating the solar resources.
Okay, but if we compensate them for a project that's not a proposed project that doesn't exist, that likely will never exist, that would be a pretty inaccurate way to calculate that, isn't that
fair? I'm basing my position on the Commission's previous rulings and how we've always calculated the value for Schedule 37.
Okay, so it's just because we've done it in the past that we should keep doing it.
Or figure out a model that is more accurate.
Those are all the questions I have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Olson?
Yeah, I have a few if I may, Your Honor. And I'm not quite sure how the Commission does this. I've got a couple of exhibits that I'd like to take from various IRPs. Perhaps Ms. Wright could confirm that they are accurate representations of the IRPs.
That's typical of what we would do. Do you have copies for council? And
I do, Your Honor, and I also have copies of the IRP. So I'll let me approach.
Absolutely. Mark this as OCS cross exhibit number one for identification.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just so that we may make sure that this is an accurate representation, I'd like to give the IRP to witness if you.
I would believe you
less. All right. If it's fully accepted, then I'm happy with that. Thank you. Your Honor, I guess it's a matter. I've got three of them. Should I do them all simultaneously? Is that for the convenience of the.
Might be efficient if you distribute
all right,
them
you.
All.
I will do that.
That's convenient for you. one for identification is a page from ostensibly from Pacific Corp, 2011 IRP.
If you want me to verify that, though.
Can I get a copy of the 1-0?
Would you like to see that to confirm that?
I mean, if it's better for the record to have me confirm it, I'm happy to.
If you're able to accept these, at least subject to check, that's, I think, an efficient way to proceed. The second exhibit for identification is page 174 from the 2013 IRP.
And look at permissions, permission aisle, view number 3, which is the equivalent of the draft from the 2015 IRP.
And so this will be cross exhibit number 3 for identification.
Your Honor, this is, excuse me, Commissioner, this is a page, for the record, it's page 224 and 225 of the Pacific Corp IRP of 2013.
This will be marked OCS cross exhibit number 4 for identification.
Your rebuttal testimony at lines 152 and 153.
Could you excuse me? I'll get that.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm there.
Thank you. You said avoided cost pricing should include carbon costs consistent with the company's base case IRP assumptions. Is that correct?
Yes.
If I could ask you to look at the 2011 handout, which I guess was number 1. It's references table 7.5. Do you have that in front of you?
7.6.
7.5 is on the back.
It's a two-sided problem. Thank you, I apologize.
You need really good eyes.
Indeed. In looking at this IRP modeling, can you tell me, for the record, how many cases the IRP modeled?
Well, I believe they did more than 16 here. So you look at, according to this table, I don't remember if they did any more than this. Are you saying that they did 30, well, they did more than 33 because they did some subsets like 38. So I'm not going to count them, but it looks like 34
and
35 maybe.
If you look at the page 165 portion of that exhibit, and those are labeled court cases. How many court cases did they?
It looks like 19. Or 20, maybe? Yeah,
20, correct. That's exactly. Of all of those cases that we've referred to, which of those are labeled base case?
I would have to go back to the IRP, and they refer to scenarios as their base case scenarios in the IRP and in the meetings, and so I would have to go back and find out which one corresponds, because often in the IRP, the language they use at some of their tables doesn't match the language everywhere, but that's a good point that would need to be clarified.
If I could ask you to look at, I guess number two, which is from the 2013 IRP.
Yes.
Table 7.6.
I'm there.
How many cases did the company model for 2013?
Whoa, they did quite a few because they modeled multiple transmission scenarios on top of their court cases. Each court case, I don't know, four or five transmission scenarios as well.
And in those, are any of those labeled base case?
In this scenario, again, this is a matter of semantics. They call their cases, they'll run base cases, but it's usually, in this case, I think it was the base case was their medium. They went from zero to the medium scenario. So I accept that the language would need to be clarified, and I also accept that it will change as IRPs go forward.
And that, in fact, one portion of that has a zero expectation of CO2 pricing.
No, it doesn't have a zero expectation of pricing. A number of years ago, the Utah regulators asked for them to run a zero case to see what that would look like. I don't believe people really believe there will be zero carbon costs in the future, and if we do, we move in peril.
That's your position, I expect. Looking at the cross-examination exhibit four.
Is that the large one?
Three, which is the four. Which is the two-page exhibit. It says on page two, what's labeled page 224, the chart on the bottom. Yeah.
Yes.
When you look at first paragraph, could you please read the read that full sentence?
Portfolio CO7 under Energy Gateway Scenario 2 ranks highest among the remaining portfolios on a risk-adjusted PVRR basis and was selected as the preliminary preferred portfolio for 2013 for the 2013 IRP.
So the preferred portfolio in 2013 was the CO7, is that correct?
Yes.
And if you look, just to affirm that, if you look on the next page, please, on page 225, There's also a slight adjustment that I've marked with yellow. Could you read that for the record, please?
The company has selected portfolio EG20C07 as the 2013 IRP preferred portfolio.
Thank you. And then referring back to exhibit number two, looking at C07, the CO2 price is listed as zero, is it not?
It is. I don't know what other, they had a high gas price in that scenario, and they had a low coal price in that scenario. So one factor does not determine the portfolio outcome, and I don't know what was in CO7 regarding RPSs. So it's very dangerous if we wanted the company to plan for single portfolios and or single risk issues and do modeling for single risk issues. We would ask them to do that, but what they're running is scenarios and a mixture of different assumptions.
And all of those are represented in the IRP, are they not?
Yes, a variety of different scenarios are run for first the system optimizer model, and that's a model that just selects a variety of portfolios that then undergo risk analysis after that.
And it yields a variety of cases. So if your statement is that the commission should rely on the IRP, that cases presented in the IRP, the fact isn't it true then that the recommendation of the IRP base case assumption is going to give little meaningful guidance because there are almost innumerable cases in the IRP that you provide?
And that same thing holds true for natural gas prices. They have a variety of different scenarios for natural gas prices, and they choose the base case scenario as their official forward price curve to do the prices. There are variabilities, I'm sorry my glasses are off to read, I have to come back up, Mom, to see you. But there are a variety of assumptions that are used in the IRP, and different forward price curves, different energy price curves, fuel price curves. And they're all, if you want to say, unknown, we don't know exactly what it will be. And they chose a high gas price curve, so then to follow your logic to its full extent, we should be running a high gas price curve in the avoided cost pricing.
I think my point was simpler than that. Simply to say that you use the IRP is not going to give their car effectively 30 or so scenarios that are run in the IRP, the various IRPs, and the IRP itself will provide little guidance.
But if we go back to the IRP standards and guidelines, it says that avoided cost pricing should be consistent with the IRP.
And you said the base case.
That's the lowest really price other than zero that they gave. I'm giving the price that the company, I'm not saying that it should be the high price. Personally, I may believe that that's a more likely outcome when you look at the science of climate change and when finally we'll take action. But I said the lower price, I suggested that price because that's the price that the company tends to lean more heavily on.
I have no further questions, Ron, or Commissioner, excuse me. Of course, the panel, I apologize.
Thank you. Josh.
Thank you, Ms. Ryder. You have a few questions. I think the record is very confused right now, and I'd like to see if we can maybe get back to what you actually said. So I'd like to refer you back to lines 152 and 153 of your rebuttal and ask you whether your summary said that avoided cost pricing should include carbon costs consistent with the company's base case IRP assumptions, or did you say the base case portfolio, or did you say the base case runs?
base case assumptions.
So let's talk about that. I mean, all these exhibits are talking about portfolios and both core cases and other cases run, sensitivity cases run. You just talked about base case assumptions, right?
That is correct.
Do you have an understanding when the IRP runs gas prices, for example? Now, that's an assumption that goes into the IRP, like you referenced an assumption. An assumption is gas price. What levels of gas prices, what do they label their three gas price assumptions? Do you know?
I believe it's low, base, and high.
So when you say a base case assumption, if we were talking about gas, would you mean the middle one, the base case gas assumption versus the high or low assumption?
That's correct.
Now, let's now go to CO2. When they made assumptions that they used in their various core and sensitivity runs and in selecting portfolios, do you know what three assumptions they used for CO2 prices and what they labeled them?
I think they labeled them under, they called it base case scenarios, so there's probably a little confusion and I'd have to go back and read, but they have a zero, a medium, I don't know if it's high, they also have a hard cap case, they have two hard cap cases. The medium is actually the lowest case that they have.
And when we go back, for example, to cross exhibit number two that has CO2 prices, they have medium, high, and zero, right? And is it a fair statement that zero is the low, medium is the base, and high is the high? Is that what you meant when you said the base case assumption?
Yes, it is.
So the medium in the 2011, was that the 2011?
That's
the 2013. The medium in the 2013 is what you meant when you said base case assumption as the CO2 prices.
Yes.
And is it also your understanding that when the company ran avoided cost pricing, at least prior to the spring of 2014, that it used its forward price curve that included the base case CO2 assumption?
Yes.
And when you ask for consistency, is that the consistency you're asking for, that they continue to use their own best projection of future prices, including CO2 costs?
Yes, it is.
Thank you. No further questions.
Ms. Hayes.
I'll just ask one follow-up question. Mr. Olson was asking you about these exhibits. These are core case assumptions. Is case modeling the only portion of the IRP that looks at carbon costs?
No, it's not.
So carbon costs factor into other assumptions used in the IRP?
Yes, it does.
Does a carbon price assumption factor into the company's official forward price curve?
Yes, it does.
Questions from the commission? Commissioner LaVar.
Hi, can I pose a hypothetical, and if it gets too strained, please tell me. But consider a 2 megawatt QF solar that feeds directly into the distribution system. And if that QF reduced the distribution system peak load to create a benefit that you spoke about earlier in your testimony, if that QF were allowed to negotiate a contract under Schedule 38 rather than take a posted price under 37, could that peak load reduction be negotiated under the current structure of 38?
Yes, it could, but that doesn't get around the fact that small QFs don't have the negotiating power that large QFs do.
Thank you. So,
anything further? Thank you.
Right, you're excused. Thank you.
Mr. Dodge, you've asked us to receive your witness's testimony as an unsworn public witness comment or?
Yes, and I don't know that it requires a motion. It would be as though we'd send a letter. It's in the record. We understand the implications of your inability to rely upon it for a factual finding, but it's in that context we would request that the commission consider that.
I just wanted to be clear that that request would be honored and granted.
Thank you.
Is there anything else to come before the commission today, Ms. Dock? We're adjourned. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Off the record.